Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
I don't know who's going to win the race for governor, but I do know that critically important to everyone in the state is who's the attorney general. Years ago, we had Boss Madigan's daughter, Lisa, running and winning, surprise, surprise, as attorney general. And I don't know. I don't think it was all that inspiring, and nothing about the law from her, from a lawyer, nothing about actually changing or shaping the law itself. Now we have Tom DeVore, Republican, running against Kwame Raoul, who was installed by Madigan to replace his daughter. I think there was $1 million in campaign funds, correct, given to Kwame from the Democrats, from Madigan and the Democrats. And now Tom DeVore is running, and the reason why I think it's important is because he will change the debate itself. If he wins, Tom DeVore will change the debate itself about the nature of government in Illinois, from the ending of no cash bail to the draconian ideas and writs that Governor Pritzker gives us. For example, I could go to the casino, I could go to the strip club, but I can't go to church. Remember that one? Joining us, as always, is Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, my friend, co-host here. And where are you while we start peeling the onion away from what Pritzker and Kwame Raoul don't want us to peel? The Thornley case. And where are you with Kwame Raoul doing what Tony Preckwinkle wants him to do? As state's attorneys throughout the state oppose the governor's decision to get rid of no cash bail? And where are you when you're on the street, under that broken streetlight, on the broken cobblestones of the Boulevard of Broken Dreams? You're here with us, me, you, Jeff Carlin, and Tom DeVore, on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And Tom DeVore on the Chicago Way. Welcome, Tom.
Hello, John.
Hey, Tom. Welcome. Thanks for joining
us. Hey, Jeffrey.
That was kind of a, I think it's a junior lawyer, you wouldn't give me a good grade on that opening statement.
I thought it was stellar.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right, let's get to it then. What does your election to the Office of Attorney General mean to the Democrats in Illinois, to the power structure, to the clique? What does it mean?
You know, I think what it means is not just to the Democrats in Illinois. I mean, we easily find ourselves talking about the Democrats because they have a one-party rule structure. But it also goes to the Republicans as well. The message is equal to them, is that if I'm the attorney general of this state, our government is going to operate or B, more visually dysfunctional, that could be a real reality, versus this cloud that we have right now. Because we have an abuse of executive power that is absolutely out of control in our state. And we have a legislature which has sat by idly and allowed it to happen. Absolutely catastrophic for the foundation of our government principles. And you don't hear me saying anything about policy, about what's good policy or bad policy. That's for the people to decide. But we must have an attorney general in that position that demands at all times that our government operates and our separation of powers is respected at all costs, regardless of the outcome.
And Tom, I mean, you people might remember you from a pandemic that happened a little while ago. I mean, one of the things you were arguing is that the governor of the state, you know, doesn't have the carte blanche to shut down local forms of government on a whim, right? I mean, that was kind of where people might know you from. Am I characterizing that right?
You are characterizing it correctly. Again, there, you know, the governor would have liked to characterize it, and he did, especially in the northern part of our state, that I was anti-safety, anti, you know, vaccine, and all of that was right. Absolutely ridiculous.
You're killing anybody people. You're sending them to church. You're killing people. You're evil. You're the Antichrist. I get it. Yeah.
You know, and that kind of, you know, really, it for people that have some bounds of reason, that it's really primitive type of you know, speech that the governor is using. But it was nothing to do with any of that. It was all about not having this executive fiat. John, you wrote about it a lot. I watched what you write. This executive fiat from a governor doing the things he was doing was absolutely horrific. And if people listen to me, and I actually, John, did it the other day in front of the Republican Central Committee for the state of Illinois, I didn't hold any punches back with DeSantis either, because, you know, I'm not here to qualify what Florida law says. But if he would have been the governor of Illinois issuing executive orders that was a different version of tyranny, which is all it is, I would have had no use for that either. And it kind of caught all of those men and women off guard when I told them that.
Because what they want is partisanship. They don't want, they want partisanship. That's what they're about.
It's what both of our parties are about. They're about partisanship. They're about power. They're not about governance. Because governance, when it's done the way that it was intended, who's in power becomes less significant. But you know, what I was hearing and what I've been hearing from a lot of them, again, and I'm not here to pick on the Republican Party, I asked them serious questions. If we had a Governor Bailey, hypothetically, are you all okay with a potential Governor Bailey's version of executive orders because you might agree with the ends achieved? I'm not. I want the legislature to legislate and to pass laws and to deliberate these things for the public to see. And if the outcome is not something personally that I agree with as a citizen, I can accept that and I'll work to change it if I don't like it. What I don't accept is this jockeying back and forth of executive power, one party back to the next. And if we're going to govern that way, John, we're going to lose this republic that we have.
Yeah, I think we're already well on our way to losing it already after I saw what the president had to stay in front of the blood, dark red walls of the Independence Hall. It was depressing. So, but here in Illinois, the sun is shining, I think, right? Governor Pritzker hasn't blotted it out completely. One of the things that have become an issue is this business of no cash bail.
Yes.
And I remember when Kwame Raoul was here on the Chicago Way and we used to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And before they all got scared away by Lori Lightfoot. And stronger sentences against those who, repeat gun offenders. Remember that one, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was all about that, and then I didn't see much of him.
Yeah.
It's kind of like he supports it, but really not. And then comes the no cash bail business. Our friend Dan Proft has made a big deal of it, and that's upset Pritzker and Lightfoot, the Democrats who are in charge of a lot of this. But I'm going to ask you, Tom, just with that as background, where do you stand on no cash bail, and are you as concerned as some are about it?
Yes, and here's the reason why. You know, the very basic premise of no cash bail, if you don't dig into the details, reasonable minds can have a conversation about that. There is no doubt that there are occasions when our jails have nonviolent offenders in them that are there merely because they can't afford to pay some nominal bail.
Of course.
You know? And to that extent, having a conversation about being able to get them out of the jail system, I'm willing to have that conversation.
This is the United States of America. This is not England in the 1600s. Okay.
Right. But what happened with that idea,
right,
is it got completely distorted, and it resulted in legislation that I don't know that most of them that voted on it really understood. And it got, the language got to be so extreme. I know who did understand it. That was Kwame Raoul, because he orchestrated most of it. But getting it to the point to, there are going to be people on the streets that absolutely should not be on the streets. There is no doubt about that in my mind whatsoever. And then turning the system and the process into being civil in nature to, well, if you don't show up for your court hearing, they'll issue what's called a rule to show cause. And then you have to be served, which is never going to happen. You know, serving process for a rule to show cause, for those of us that have been in civil practice for a long time, we just laugh because it doesn't work very well. And we're going to have people on the streets that are dangerous. And I don't think anybody wanted that. Any reasonable people. I think some of the extreme people like Kwame and the governor and Lightfoot may have been, and Fox, okay with it. But I don't think ordinary, everyday, prudent people in the legislature really appreciated that. And now they're stuck with it. So it absolutely needs to be unwound and have a reasonable conversation. I've been across the state, John, and these jails are going to be letting out people in mass at the beginning of January. I don't know how it's going to, play out. It's going to be a disaster, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no,
what's the way to address it?
Yeah. How do you start pulling at that thread? I mean,
you have the governor just stop it. Can he stop it?
No, the governor can't stop it because it was a law that was passed. And I would not, even if Governor Pritzker says, I'm going to issue an executive order to do something, I would not be in favor of it because it's abuse of power. But what's going to happen, again, I don't know what's going to happen, but one of the things I think we'll see is across the state, depending upon where you're at, I think it's going to be handled differently. You know, you get into, you know, my part of the state and you have someone that should be in jail and that judge thinks they should be in jail because there's a danger to society. I want to see what happens because that's one of the big changes is when now the statute says is that you have to be deemed a danger, not just to society, but to a specific identifiable person. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so hypothetically, if someone commits murder, are they a danger to a specific identifiable person? The person's deceased.
Right.
They're no longer a danger. So being able to hold that person on bail after committing murder could be a violation of statute as written. Did they intend that? No.
So
I'm going to see how the judges and the state's attorneys across the state handle that.
Well, what was Kwame Raoul doing as this bill was getting hammered out?
Well, my understanding was Kwame was working diligently at some point in time with law enforcement to try to put some language together that they could work with.
That was the story. That was one of the stories that was put out.
And I know it to be true up until a couple of days before the bill got shoved through at the midnight hour. He went radio silent, quit talking to everybody. So my suspicion is whoever it is that wields the political influence, and we all could speculate on who that is, but you can do that. I don't need
Well, go ahead.
Mike Madigan?
Well, Mike Madigan, I think, is not anywhere now. But
Christopher, in the background, him and his people, Christopher Welch.
The speaker?
J.C. Pritzker.
Yeah.
Lori Lightfoot.
He forgot to mention Tony Preckwinkle. Cook County president of the board, of the Cook County board.
Whole structure. And when I say Mike Madigan, I'm referring to that whole structure that he put together over decades, right? He may not be picking up the phone making the calls right now.
He's not.
But that whole machine that Mike put together over those decades, it's still alive and well. So they somehow or another got a hold of Kwame Raoul and told him what was going to happen. And he had to acquiesce. And the reason that he has to acquiesce is because he's a lifelong politician. He's got to where he is in politics solely by doing the bidding of other people. He got appointed to office in the legislature. He then gets the job as the attorney general. If he doesn't appease that machine, he never gets reelected. He doesn't have the support of the grassroots support of the people of this state. Most of them don't even know who he is. And so and we could talk about that too, John, with the issues with the COVID pandemic, when Governor Pritzker and the whole machine of politics in Illinois tells Kwame Raoul to jump, he jumps. He doesn't have a choice. His political survival depends upon it. It is what it is. So that's what happened with the Safety Act. Me, where I'm different is I'll jump for no man or no machine. And if that means I'm not in public office, I'm okay with that.
Right.
But if I'm in office, the people's interest will always come first. I don't care who likes it. Kwame Raoul doesn't have that in him, sadly, because he wants to be a politician. He knows what he has to do to survive. And it compromises him as the attorney general of this state. It's that simple.
Well, Tom, I mean, one of the things we always joke about here is that you know, all this Madigan stuff and the predecessor to Kwame never finding any corruption in any of the institutions, which we all know is not true. You know, it's city, this one party rule leads us surely into corruption. What do you want to do on that front? I mean, you win, you're elected, you're the man in charge. What's the first step there?
There will be no politician at any level or holding any office, Republican, Democrat. Gentlemen, I've been spending a lot of time in the south side and the west side of Chicago. And you know, this conversation that I have with folks, it's really very interesting and eye-opening. Because when I go to the black community, a lot of the folks that I talk to, they're leaders in the community, I won't mention their names. When we talk about corruption, public corruption, and they're aware of what's been going on the last couple of years with Pritzker and the mayor is dealing with the COVID pandemic and the shutdowns and stuff. And you know what the folks in the black community tell me? Welcome to the show. We've been dealing with corrupt politicians for decades in our communities, mayors, city council members, et cetera, you know, doing these things in our communities. And we've been trying to get the attorney general's attention for decades to help us. And it goes on deaf ears. It goes on deaf ears. And I said, okay, give me some examples. They start giving me examples about the mayor of the city of Dalton and show me documents. And I'm going, oh my God. And I look at that stuff and it's clear abuse of authority. Mm-hmm. Is it the state level? The Jenny Thornley matter, John. That is
there clear. There you go.
Clear. Documented.
Give us
workman's comp fraud.
Give us short synopsis of the, because this is something you mm-hmm. I don't think many of you have heard about it, or maybe you have if you read Wire Points and Ted Dabrowski, but yeah, I don't think it's really being covered by the Chicago Tribune or the Chicago Sun-Times or any of
none
these.
None of them have covered it recently. The Tribune wrote an article. Dan wrote an article about it 8-9 months ago, but he's not updated it. The short version is Jenny Thornley is a campaign staffer for Pritzker. She worked for the state police merit board. She stole money. She alleged she was sexually assaulted. She was not sexually assaulted. She did steal money. And after
Hold it. She stole, according to who, counselor?
According to a $550,000 internal investigation from a group that was hired by and recommended by Governor Pritzker.
Okay.
The taxpayer spent $550,000 on a 130-page report that they went and they actually got the timesheets where she was turning in overtime, and they were watching and had the videos, John, to show she was leaving at normal business hours, sometimes before normal business, but she would turn in overtime for those days. It's documented crystal clear. She has, in fact, now been charged for this overtime fraud in Sangamon County.
Sangamon County.
Dun, yes. Dun, dun. And
that's,
then,
that's the mud pen of our buddy Big Bill Cellini, isn't it? Yeah. Keep going.
So when she knows she's had for the overtime fraud, she alleges she was sexually assaulted by her supervisor. This internal investigation resulted in them giving a very thorough written $550,000 taxpayer opinion. There was no sexual assault, and actually the evidence pointed to the contrary. Now, Ms. Thornley had filed in the meantime a workman's compensation disability request with the TriStar Insurance Company for the state of Illinois. In the application of injury, the notice of injury, she does not list the merit board as her employer. She lists the governor's office as her employer. And she lists J.B. Pritzker as her supervisor and files that false statement to get disability benefits.
That now, she sounds got a fired. Little kinky.
She got fired in July of 2021 after that investigation was over. And she was on no pay or on paid leave while the investigation was going on. She gets terminated after the investigation's done. She then starts collecting disability benefits based upon the application that she worked for the governor and the governor's office. The merit board finds out about it. And they start trying to intervene.
To stop her? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, saying, why is she getting disability benefits? Right. Why are we not involved? We're her employer. And there are emails that show to where it's the governor's office is handling this. General counsel Ann Spillane is involved. And we've been told we can't talk to you, merit board. It's in the emails.
Jeez.
Who's we? Who's we can't talk to the merit board? This is
the insurance company.
Oh, okay. So there's got to be a grand jury on this? Is there a grand jury on this thing?
I'm getting there. So she eventually in September gets charged with overtime fraud on the turning in the fake hours. As soon as she gets overtime fraud charges, she stops getting her disability payments. Isn't that a coincidence? There's no connection. If she was injured at work, there's no connection to overtime fraud. She's injured at work. She's injured at work. They knew she wasn't injured at work before they even started giving her the payments. But again, what I've been telling people is that leave whether or not she was injured at work out of it from the false, now debunked sexual assault. She could have never been injured at work for the governor's office because she never worked for the governor's office. And so they filed that phony, or she filed for certain, we know, the phony injury claim because it took the process out of the merit board's hands and put it in the hands of the governor's office and Ann Spillane directly. She collected over $70,000 in benefits.
So Kwame Raoul leading the charge on this thing to get to the bottom of it?
Kwame Raoul's office. So the Kwame Raoul's office in January of 2021 got a letter from the state CMS saying she needs to be charged. We want her charged with workman's comp fraud. Kwame Raoul has a division of workman's comp fraud in the attorney general's office. They're the only ones that prosecute it. And Kwame says, we referred that to the appellate prosecutor. There is no such thing as a referral to the appellate prosecutor's office. That's not how it works. If you have a conflict, Kwame says he has a conflict. Gentlemen, he does not have a conflict.
What is this conflict? What is his stated conflict?
His stated conflict is that, we represent the state of Illinois against Jenny Thornley in her alleged wrongful termination case. And so since we're against her in that case, I can't bring charges against her for workman's comp fraud. It would be looking like I might be retaliating against her. It's laughable.
It also puts him at odds with Pritzker.
Right. Well, that's the truth.
Right.
That's the real truth. You and I know that the reason he's not done this. But here's where it gets worse, John, is that he says I referred it. Kwame's office said it, and then Kwame said it on the camera twice. The first time he said it on the camera, the appellate prosecutor's office of the state of Illinois that would traditionally handle conflicts for the attorney general sent an email to, and we have the email, sent an email to the attorney general's office making it clear, you have never referred the workman's comp matter of Jenny Thornley to our office. We don't know what you're talking about. By the way, we don't do workman's comp prosecution. Your office does workman's comp prosecution. But if you think there's a conflict, the proper mechanism is that you ask the court to appoint us to that case. And if the court appoints us, then we're in.
Right.
Jeez.
That's how it works. Kwame Raoul then got asked about it by Greg Bishop from Center Square a second time. Right. Kwame got defensive and aggressive with Greg, saying, I told you I referred it. And Greg's going, the appellate prosecutor says you haven't referred it. Here's why Kwame Raoul won't file the proper motion asking the court to appoint the appellate prosecutor. Because when you file a motion with the court as the attorney general saying, I've got a conflict, appoint the appellate prosecutor, you have to convince the judge that you actually have a conflict.
Yes.
And Kwame could not come to the judge and say, we're against Ms. Thornley in this federal employment case. So since we're against her, I've got a conflict. The judge would laugh him out the courtroom saying, you don't have a conflict.
Plus, he'd have to put it down in writing.
Right. You have to put it in writing. Right? And
that would be that's the time that Tom DeVore swoops in, grabs that document and waves it over his head at a news conference or a debate, right?
Yes. And if he wants, what he would have to do is be honest with the judge, because the judge would be an intelligent person, and say, you know what? If I bring this case against Ms. Thornley, or if I'm going to investigate and potentially bring charges, there's a real likelihood that that could include charges against somebody in the governor's office or the governor himself. And since I represent the governor on a variety of things, I've got a political conflict here and I can't file this case. That would be the truth, John, but he can't say that in a court document. And so he's just deflecting and running it in circles, praying that the election comes before that ever might come real issue. That's what's happening. That's the truth.
This has got to perplex the editorial boards of Chicago. I would assume the AFL-CIO WBEZ Times and the Combine Tribune would be, not knowing what to do, especially with Mark Lennon of Wire Points hammering at this. I recommend, and look, before we go any further, just so there's no mistake, Jenny Thornley, if you want to respond to what Tom DeVore said on this podcast,
sure,
please be our guest.
Please
come on and be the guest, and I'll have a Bible, and you can swear to the best of your ability.
Right, Your Honor.
And we'll swear. Yeah, we'll take a deposition, right? And I'll have my.
Maybe Kwame Raoul would like to come on and talk to you and explain why he has not, one, prosecuted this matter, or two, actually filed the motion with the court to have the appellate prosecutor appointed. Because not only do you have to lay out the conflict, John, you have to also say to the court, who are the persons that you're actually wanting me to give jurisdiction to the appellate prosecutor to potentially charge with a crime? That list is going to include more people than Jenny Thornley.
a fine kettle of fish, John Carlin.
Exactly, John.
Because conspiracy to commit workman's comp fraud is by statute subject to the same charge. So let me ask you, sir.
Yes, sir.
When you have emails that show Ann Spillane herself orchestrated getting those benefits paid to Jenny Thornley based upon an injury claim.
This is the lawyer for Pritzker is what you said. Yes. Ann Spillane, right?
Ann Spillane. The emails themselves show that she materially participated in these work comp benefits based upon an application for benefits that listed an employer that the lady never worked for.
It stinks, I tell you. It stinks.
Well, one thing I do know, according to what I'm reading in front of me on the screen right now, what Pritzker said a while back in August 6th, is nothing other than what I read in the paper. I know nothing. I know nothing other than what I read in the paper about it, said Governor Pritzker, adding, quote, "The truth is, if somebody committed workman's comp fraud, they should be held accountable." Quote.
Agree with him.
That's all he said. But then why isn't he saying, hey, Kwame, I paid for you to, me and Mike Madigan paid for you to be the Attorney General. So come on, step up, man. Step up on the corner, right?
You know, isn't it odd that the governor says he knows nothing when there's emails in the $550,000 investigation that Jenny Thornley sent to Mrs. Pritzker herself talking about this matter, saying that that the governor needs to know.
Was Jenny Thornley an expert in show jumping horses?
I don't know. She has the governor and because she listed the governor's personal cell phone on her application for
benefits.
Oh my gosh.
I think this is a job for a federal grand jury, my friend.
Seriously.
I trust me, I'm trying. There, you know, that whole thing right there, that workman's comp fraud case. Miss Thornley, again, she filled out the application, right? Listing the governor.
Right.
I would love to talk to Miss Thornley or have the federal prosecutors talk to Miss Thornley about who she worked with and accomplishing all of that. She didn't do that by herself. There's no way she did that by herself. And everybody knew. The governor's office knew that the application for benefits was fraudulent because she never worked for the governor. She worked for the Illinois State Police Merit Board since 2013 before J.B. Pritzker ever was elected to the office of governor. She was on his campaign staff and helped him get elected. Pictures of him and her together all over the internet.
This is
she never worked for the governor's office.
This is bumbling, bumbling, bumbling. This is not real. I remember when Rich Daley had armies of patronage workers, and they were on trial, and the mayor didn't know. Just like Pritzker, he knew nothing.
I know nothing.
And then after Zorich went away. Or when he was sentenced, they had a little pizza party for him at the in the basement of the Church of the Nativity in Bridgeport. And I'm just wondering, is there a pizza party in due for Jenny Thornley? Does she like Saputo's pizza?
That's a good question, sir. But that's the Thornley matter. And you know what? Kwame Raoul has lied on the camera, helping to deflect, cover up that whole thing. That's where I'm coming from. He's the attorney general. He has a duty, an oath to the people of this state to prosecute criminals. There is a crime here. It's a clear crime. And not only has he not prosecuted it, he's not properly referred and got the appellate prosecutor appointed because he can't file that document because it will make him and the governor look horrific if he files that motion to appoint the appellate prosecutor. So he's lying to people on the camera, John.
What will it make? How will it be? What is horrific about it? How will it make them horrific?
It will make it horrific because he's going to have to list in there his political affiliation with the governor of why he's not going to bring that case, because he's conflicted, because political conflicts are a bona fide basis for you to say, I can't do this because I'm, as a, an attorney, I'm torn between what's going on here. But you have to say that. I mean, there's case law about these types of conflicts.
You have to cop to the fact that you don't want to touch it.
Yes, I don't want to touch it.
You put it on, you put it on the record, and then other people can take shots at you, right?
Well, not only are they going to take shots at you, can you imagine what that does to Governor Pritzker 2 months before an election? Right? Whether he wins or loses re-election, no different. You're going to put in there that I can't file this case against Jenny Thornley because of these connections that we've just spent the last 20 minutes talking about?
He can't file because he doesn't want to upset Pritzker's campaign. Or he doesn't,
yes.
Right.
And he doesn't want to, you know, harm the Pritzker's dream of becoming president of the United States.
Exactly right, John.
Ding, ding,
that's
ding,
what's
ding.
Going on. And as a consequence, the political gamesmanship continues, and Kwame Raoul, once again, in his, he's been there almost 8 years, has never prosecuted an ounce of public corruption. So,
well, I don't like the attorney generals of the state at prosecuting public corruption, simply because I don't, it becomes a case of like one side's political lawyer going after the other side's political lawyer. And it can devolve into that. But you know how you stop it from being questioned? Do your job. Do your job, Kwame.
Yep.
Right? I think so. Do your job and just let the cards fall where they may.
That's it. I mean, that's, I agree.
Now, so if this, say if this is not resolved, and say if, you know, against my better judgment, the people of Illinois don't elect Tom DeVore, which I would like. And I'm just doing this as a boon to all the newspaper reporters who don't want to go into these issues unless there's somebody out there quoted on the record to lead them by the nose, you know, and show them what the deal is. But if they don't, If Kwame Israel is elected, what happens to this story?
Goes away.
Right.
There you go.
It goes away.
Goes away. Well, hey, Tom, I really appreciate you come join us here as we kind of head towards a funny. What did Bill Cameron used to call this time of year in the election cycles? Funny season?
Silly season.
Silly season. That's what it was. I got to ask you, give me a, what if I'm coming down to Greenville? What do I check out? Give me the pitch for your hometown.
Did you come to Greenville?
Yeah.
He wants to do a podcast there.
Yeah, maybe we take this thing on the road. What do we got to check out?
I love my hometown, but it's a small 5,000 person community. There's a few restaurants and a movie theater that hasn't been open since COVID started. And, there's not a lot to do in the city of Greenville, but I love the community.
Well, that's what I love. I love the small town feel, you know. John, I always talk about that idyllic, couple good restaurants are all you really need.
Yeah.
There's only, in a small town, everybody knows your business, Jeff. Everybody. And half of them are your relatives because all your cousins are there. And they know, wasn't he dating that other girl first before he met? And all that. And everyone knows your business. I'm just telling you, Jeff, that's how it works.
Wow.
I mean, the small town that we're from has, like, I think 400 people in it. It's the finest village in the universe. Grisas, Arcadia, Greece, in the south of Greece, Peloponnesus. And we make great cherries. Grow some great cherries. What kind of fruits do they grow in Greenville, Tom?
They don't. We have corn and soybeans and wheat in the big area of Greenville. We don't grow any fruit.
Well, that's bad. Yeah.
Grow crops. We have cattle and corn.
Cattle and corn. All right. Well, one thing. Do you have churches there?
Yes, we have a lot of them.
All right, let's get to this other issue because I know there's other things to talk about, and I don't want to make this 3-hour podcast. But to the to me, the most important thing that one of the most important things that you've done is file suit, and along with Darren Bailey, you've also, he's done it too, and you've done it, file suit against Pritzker on this high-handed, what is it, noblesse oblige business, where he can sign a writ and keep people from going to church, but I can go to a strip club, but I can't go to a church. What was that about, Tom? What was that whole business about during the pandemic?
Well, you know, the issue of it, so let's, we're going back right now into 2020, when you were dealing with the closures of certain types of businesses or institutions, the churches.
Necessary businesses?
Essential,
right.
Yeah, essential was the language.
Like pole dancers. Pole dancers are essential.
Yeah. So are you guys aware that the first executive order that the governor signed, what business model that protected? Are you familiar?
Yes.
Go on.
The pot shops.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, tell us.
Yeah, so, executive order number one was to protect marijuana dispensaries. So, okay.
Of course.
We could sit here and laugh forever about the ridiculousness of those executive orders of, you know, again, you could go to the casinos and put all your money down the drain of the casino, but you couldn't go to church. You could go to Walmart, but you couldn't go to the local shoe store or flower shop. It was absurd.
Where else could you go? You could go to Home Depot, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Home Depot, you got to have it. But did they really have, wasn't there a provision that you could go to the liquor store and the strip joint, the strip club, whatever? Weren't strip clubs?
The liquor stores, I don't remember. The strip clubs, where they fell in that thing. Mm-hmm. Because here's what the issue, when the governor issued that executive order, let me tell you, gentlemen, something. Every reasonable-minded lawyer, law enforcement person, state's attorney, most of them, almost all of them, except for a couple, knew that that executive order wasn't worth the paper it was written on. Let's talk about small businesses for a second. How many times in the state of Illinois do you think that Governor Pritzker took a business, church, throw them all in there, any of them to court and says, you're letting people inside, my executive order says you can't do it, judge, issue this order and tell them they can't do it. How many times do you think that happened?
None.
Zero. How many times do you think he tried?
None.
Zero.
Because he knew. I mean, didn't he go to law school? He knew that this was, he didn't want, it's just like this Thornley thing. You don't want to bring it up because in a court, because you're going to get shot down and made a fool out of.
Yeah. And so I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of, you know, businesses across the state. I had helped churches. I helped, you know, salon, every business you could think of. And you know all I had to do, gentlemen? Only thing I had to do was give them enough courage to open. And when they would open and they would finally, they'd get a letter, a scare letter or something, and I would just tell them, don't worry about it. Just nobody can do anything. That's all that it ever took. Well, Tom, they're going to come and take something. I'm like, no, they're not. They're not going to do anything. Well, it was all a facade. I had five or six, I can't remember, businesses that ended up being closed by a court, but it had nothing to do with Pritzker's executive order. It was a local food ordinance or something in a couple
there
of
you
towns.
Go. Well, that's right. Part of it. I grew up in a small business, Tom.
Yeah. It was a game City they Hall. Played with. It was a game that a couple of counties played with a food ordinance trying to invoke the policies of the executive order. But that executive order in and of itself was completely, it was a facade. And so when Pritzker was going around the state, oh, the courts have said I can do it. The courts have said I can do it. John, all the courts ever said, and I'm in error in my opinion, but I'm not going to disrespect the court, is they said that the governor could issue these 30-day serial proclamations.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the courts ever said. Again, I completely disagree with the Foxfire case, but that's the ruling as of today, so be it.
Right.
But there were no courts that ever issued any rulings that said Pritzker, with that executive authority, can close a business. It never happened. because he would never take it to court. Because if you read about what Governor Pritzker was doing, there's federal documents. There's actually some local educational reports talking about how do you manage pandemics, et cetera.
Yeah.
And they actually talk about when these types of executive directives get issued, that you may only get 50, 60, 70% compliance, but that's considered success.
Yeah.
Right? Have you guys read any of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's, I mean, we talked about that stuff during, you know, the beginning of the pandemic with the CDC and the whole idea of the masks. Like, well, if we don't do this, we don't do that. And they're all trying to outthink the populace. And it's, yes. And, you know, it doesn't work.
What kind of revenge has Governor Pritzker applied to Seventh Circuit Judge Raylene Grinshaw?
Oh, Judge Grinshaw?
Yes, Judge Raylene Grinshaw.
Keep in mind, Judge Grinshaw gave Governor Pritzker I never won a case in front of her until I won the one on the kids in the mask. I lost every time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She ruled in August of 2000, and I'm not disrespecting her. I love her. I think she's a great lady. She ruled in the governor's favor in August of 2020 in regard to the mask issue with kids and masks in schools. And in February 2022, she called him the evil that the law was intended to protect people against. So he can't do anything to her. I mean, she's an elected judge in the Seventh Judicial Circuit. She doesn't answer to them. But, you know, that ruling that she wrote was exactly spot on, 100% spot on.
So what is the next step in this campaign? Because we have to close this out. What's the next step in the campaign for you, Tom?
I mean, the next step in the campaign for us is starting here real soon. I'm going to be up north all the time, and I'm going to be talking to these communities about the law, my vision of what the law is supposed to be for them, because the governor has done a sadly decent job of scaring the hell out of people, John.
Right.
Making people think that his version of tyranny is what's needed to keep them safe.
They're scared. And my message, they're always scared of power.
Yes, here. They're scared of power. And my message to not only the Republicans, but to Democrats and to independents is that you have the power. You are people. You have the power. Quit letting politicians, all of them, tell you that they're the ones that you need. You don't need them. You need them to represent you within the confines of the law only. And if the law needs to change, you change it, because I'm convinced that that message, which I've been living the last 2 years, if I get that message broadly enough communicated to the people, that they'll appreciate that. And they're not, because I don't think they're satisfied with what Kwame Raoul's been doing, just being the governor's lapdog. I mean, everybody knows it. It's no secret. I think it's dangerous. This one party rule is going to destroy our state. And I'm hoping that people don't want it.
Well, there it is.
It's already destroyed the state.
I don't know,
now that I'm gone, I'm waving at you guys from across the border.
We know.
I'm not living in some fancy like Naples, you know. I got some cornfields next to me. Anyway. So Tom DeWar, you're invited to write 900 words, and so is Kwame. 900 words on why you should be attorney general. As long as it's, I'll edit, and as long as it's, you know, not inflammatory or libelous, I wouldn't
not
take
my
it
style. Yeah.
I just have to say that so other people know. And everybody knows who's listening that I've also asked everybody running for mayor to write me the same. You know, write, mm-hmm. Why do you want to be mayor? Why do you want to be attorney general of Illinois? So we'll see what happens.
We'll get that to you, sir.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep, thank you, gentlemen.
The Jenny Thornley thing. There were three different reasons given. One in a letter to CMS,
but
I think.
The bottom line there is that we referred the case way back. No, let me finish. You're asking me a question. Let me finish. Way back, The state appellate prosecutor had the case. We had three cases that there was a conflict on. If there was a cover-up, we would not have communicated with the Sangamon State state's attorney and the appellate prosecutor, who already had a case against Jenny Thornton. And so that's it. There's nothing else to be said on that case.
It seems though there are three different reasons given. One was no jurisdiction on authority. Another one was a conflict.
So what's your ultimate question?
Why isn't this being prosecuted?
You have to ask the state appellate prosecutor, who already has a case against Ms. Thornley, as to what their strategy is, which they may or may not share with you. We are conflicted out. I can't say that. There's only so many times I can say that. Senator, thank you for your question.
That was fun, huh, Jeff?
Yeah, that was great. Right. I mean, I enjoy a good civil servant, you know, and someone who sees it as a service.
This guy would be the worst nightmare because, you know, the office is like attorney general and comptroller. Comptroller says, you know, who's going to get paid first, right? Who's going to get paid? Yeah. Get in line. And I, you know, oh, sir, Mr. Carlin, we can't pay you for about 3 years. So you're going to lose your business.
Yeah.
But say some others like Joe Bag of Donuts. from the special ward or the
right
the one protected by Pritzker and Preckwinkle. Yeah.
Right.
You get paid right away, but it depends.
Top of the list.
Yeah. And the same thing with Attorney General. You can make arguments about the nature of government and the nature of our freedom and liberty against tyranny. That would be astounding and
just make opinions. I mean, just write opinions. You don't even have to do...
Shake them to the very foundation. Right.
Yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, it's something we've seen that, you know, there are too many things that don't pass a smell test, right? I mean, that whole Thornley story, I mean, geez, that alone is enough to... But it's no surprise, right? I mean, if you said
that
patronage has been part of the Chicago way since the earliest days.
That's why we call it that.
Mm-hmm.
For Tom DeVore, lawyer who fought off Pritzker and his COVID shutdowns for churches, and who will, if elected, wreak havoc among Democrats and Republicans who are part of the combine. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, and future physics teacher. And I guess we're going to dinner soon, right? We're going to go to Comma Bistro, you, me, and Matt Rosenberg, to prepare for that Chicago Way Goes to the North Shore thing.
There you go. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Tasty stuff. I love it. It's one of my favorite restaurants.
Can't wait.
Comma Bistro in LaGrange. You don't even have to eat meat. You know, they have vegetarian food, but the vindaloo is really good. You know, ghost pepper vindaloo. Yeah,
oh, jeez.
Give me a pint of yogurt to wash it down. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, Greek Orthodox Christian, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com. And every day brings us closer to announcing our sponsors. So when the lawyer gets back from Belize or wherever he is, we'll get that done. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Chicago Way Podcast on WGN+.